Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
This is a girl on a different planet in a constellation far away. We are in love and you can't deny I'm with her. Sha-la-la-la, sha-la-la-la. I'm with her. Sha-la-la-la. Living alone, living all alone.
You're listening to the Windy City Queercast, show number 589. I'm Amy Matheny, and I am thrilled to be on the show today. I've been doing some traveling. I'm going to sit down on the couch and talk with Mitchell about it very soon and with all of you, which is one of my favorite things to do. I don't know if you enjoy it, but I enjoy it. I enjoy rehashing a trip and travel and telling everybody all my favorites. So next week, I will be doing that. But I was just in P-Town and also in Newport, Rhode Island. And throughout the summer, wonderful acts come through P-Town and just dovetailing into my time in the gayest, best little New England city in the world. Ms. Coco Peru was headlining there in Provincetown, and now she is coming to Chicago here in September, a part of the Cabaret Project. And I have never interviewed Ms. Coco Peru, and I am so excited to get to sit and talk with her and just learn about her incredible career. Girl's been around and still looks good and still has something to say. You know, she is subversive and smart and funny. And I don't think I'm nervous. I think we're really going to get along. So I'm super, super excited. So Ms. Coco Peru on the show today. Also, I'll be telling you what's going on in the LGBT news here as summer winds down. That's right. I mean, I don't know if I can wear white while you're listening to this podcast. I think I'm going to push it. I feel like they still wear white in Miami and other beautiful tropical places after Labor Day. I just still have a lot of that Southern debutante ingrained in my DNA that makes it very hard to wear like white shoes and white pants and things like that after Labor Day. But I want to. I need summer to go on longer. So tell you what's going on in LGBT news, theater, and much, much more. But Ms. Coco Peru on with us today. Very excited to talk about her new show that she is bringing to Chicago with the Cabaret Project. So buckle in. This one's going to be fun.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Week in News.
In Ohio, medically necessary transgender procedures will be covered under the City of Cincinnati's health insurance starting next year. Cincinnati would be the first city in Ohio to offer transgender procedures in its health benefits.
On August 20th, the United States Supreme Court agreed to delay an appeals court ruling striking down Virginia's marriage equality ban. The nation's highest court in McQuigg versus Bostick granted a request from a county clerk in Northern Virginia to delay a fourth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals decision that would have allowed for same-sex couples to marry beginning August 21st. The state would have also had to start recognizing same-sex marriages from out of the state if the Supreme Court had denied the request.
A New York couple has been ordered to pay $13,000 in fines and restitution for refusing to host a same-sex couple's wedding at their 100-acre upstate farm. Jennifer and Melissa McCarthy filed a complaint in 2012 against the Liberty Ridge Farm after being refused because of the owner's religious beliefs.
A federal judge on August 21st declared Florida's ban on same-sex marriage unconstitutional, joining state judges in four counties who have issued pro-marriage equality rulings. U.S. District Judge Robert L. Hinkle ruled that the ban added to Florida's constitution by voters in 2008 violates the 14th Amendment's guarantees of equal protection and due process. Hinkle also issued a stay, delaying the effect of his order, meaning no marriage licenses will be immediately issued for same-sex couples.
Three retired U.S. military general officers, including the former chief medical officer of the U.S. Army, issued a joint statement concluding that the military's ban on transgendered service could be eliminated in a straightforward manner that is consistent with military readiness and core values. Their statement accompanies the release of a new study called Report of the Planning Commission on Transgender Military Service, which finds that allowing transgender personnel to serve in the military is administratively feasible and will not be burdensome or complicated, and provides a detailed roadmap for the policy change.
A police officer who pushed openly gay CNN journalist Don Lemon on live television in Ferguson, Missouri, has been relieved of duty following the discovery of a videotaped speech in which he criticized President Obama, Muslims, and gays in the military. St. Louis County cop Dan Page, a 35-year police veteran who denounced hate crime laws and boasted of killings he claimed to have committed in the remarks delivered to a group called the Oath Keepers of St. Louis and St. Charles.
The U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs, VA, is being sued over its refusal to grant spousal benefits to same-sex military couples in states where these marriages are not recognized. The American Military Partner Association, with legal counsels Lambda Legal and Morrison & Forster LLP, filed suit against the VA.
A Republican group tied to hedge fund billionaire Paul Singer plans to spend at least $2 million up to Election Day to boost congressional candidates who share its views in favor of gay rights. American Unity plans to back seven congressional candidates ahead of November's elections and could add more to the roster.
A poll concluded that a majority of Republicans say the sexual orientation of a congressional candidate would not impact their vote. 68% of Republicans who responded to a McClatchy-Marist poll said it wouldn't make any difference one way or another if they heard a well-qualified candidate for Congress happened to be gay. However, the poll also indicated the GOP continues to lag behind a majority of U.S. residents in its embrace of LGBT equality.
Gallup released a study that shows that LGBT adults are more likely than their non-LGBT counterparts to lack health insurance coverage, 17.6% versus 13.2%, respectively. The study considered change in health care coverage in the last quarter of 2013 and the second quarter of 2014, which roughly represents the periods before and after open enrollment associated with the Affordable Care Act, known as Obamacare. Since the fourth quarter of 2013, the percentage of uninsured LGBT adults fell 4.4 percentage points compared to 3.5-point drop among non-LGBT Americans.
In Oregon, the Health Evidence Review Commission, a 13-member board charged with setting state health plan priorities, has added transgender protections to the program. The decision means that people seeking treatment for gender dysphoria, a condition in which a person does not feel that his, her, or their gender identity conforms with the birth gender, can now receive treatment under the Oregon Health Plan.
In world news, Luxembourg Prime Minister Javier Bettel could be among the first to benefit from the new marriage equality laws after he announced he and his long-term partner will tie the knot. Bettel, who has lived with his Belgian architect partner since 2010 in a civil partnership, did not reveal the wedding date.
Patricia Urena Rodriguez, the 23-year-old winner of Miss Spain in both 2008 and 2013, came out as a lesbian through an Instagram post. The picture, captioned Romeo and Juliet, shows Rodriguez in an intimate moment with girlfriend Vanessa Klein, a Spanish DJ and singer. An actress and model, Rodriguez represented Spain in the Miss Universe competition.
Berlin's openly gay mayor, Klaus Wowereit, plans to step down December 11th amid an ongoing situation over the city's new airport. As mayor of the German capital since 2001, he was credited with giving it a poor but sexy brand internationally. Wowereit, who is 60, was widely popular. However, his reputation was tarnished by the debacle over the opening of Berlin-Brandenburg Airport, which was to be inaugurated in late 2011 and is still not open. Wowereit still has 2 years left in his term.
In Ireland, the new Rose of Tralee, Maria Walsh, age 27, has revealed that she is a lesbian. The Rose of Tralee International Festival is one of Ireland's largest and longest-running festivals.
Iranian Muslim women Sahara Mosleh and Mariam Aranfar married in Stockholm during the city's annual LGBTI Pride Festival and are perhaps the first Iranian women to marry each other in a religious ceremony in the whole world. The wedding happened just days before the couple expected the birth of their first child together.
Two lesbians have been freed from jail in Cameroon after spending 9 months in prison awaiting trial and then potentially facing 2 years in prison. The two were arrested in the agricultural center of Abolawa, capital of Cameroon's south region, in November of 2013 on charges of sexual behavior involving another woman.
In entertainment news, GLSEN has announced honorees for its upcoming GLSEN Respect Awards in Los Angeles. Julia Roberts and husband Danny Motor will receive the Humanitarian Award for their commitment to and support of numerous causes, including GLSEN, UNICEF, Heal the Bay, and Stand Up to Cancer. This year's Chairman's Award will be presented to Robert Greenblatt, chairman of NBC Entertainment, while Dancing with the Stars choreographer Derek Huff will receive the Inspiration Award.
Jennifer Aniston, John Hamm, and Will Ferrell are headlining the Stand Up to Cancer telecast that will take place September 5th. Also involved are celebrities such as Gwyneth Paltrow, Reese Witherspoon, Pierce Brosnan, Halle Berry, Kiefer Sutherland, Eric Stone Street, and Jesse Tyler Ferguson. The Who, Jennifer Hudson, Ariana Grande, and Dave Matthews are slated to perform. ABC, CBS, Fox, and NBC, and a slew of cable channels are running the telecast commercial-free.
Bravo exec Andy Cohen will be among the guest judges on the new season of Top Chef that starts airing October 15th. The new season, set in New England, includes several firsts, such as a challenge using only ingredients that would have been on hand at the first Thanksgiving meal.
Just a few months after secretly tying the knot, Jodie Foster and new wife Alexandra Hedison hit an Emmys after party August 25th as a married couple. The couple attended HBO's official 2014 Emmy after party at the Plaza at the Pacific Design Center in L.A. Both women wore complimentary black gowns for the star-studded soiree. Foster and Hedison exchanged vows in a private ceremony this past April.
Director Patrick Hughes has said that Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jet Li's Expendables 3 characters are gay. Speculation emerged online after the release of the third film as a scene involving Schwarzenegger and Li sees the pair getting close in a bar.
NBC's Jenna Wolfe and Stephanie Gosk are about to be moms for the second time. Wolfe said on the Today Show, "I figured I got pregnant. I did it right the first time. I'm just going to do the exact same thing again, and we're going to hope for the best."
And the irresistible force met the immovable object recently when openly gay St. Louis Rams linebacker Michael Sam lined up against Cleveland Browns quarterback Johnny Manziel in week 3 of the preseason. Sam got the better of Manziel on one fourth quarter play, sending the former Heisman Trophy winner to the turf. And that's the week in news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hello, this is Pearman speaking. Fasten your seatbelts, frequent flyers. You're flying the Windy City Queercast.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the
Club.
For the week of September 1st, 2014, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. Through comedy, songs, and plenty of honest storytelling, one man takes audiences on a hilarious autobiographical journey through the chemical highs, devastating lows, and ultimately redemption from his drug-addled, sex-crazed life. Join About Face Theater in association with Justin Brill as they present Methtacular, written and performed by Stephen Strafford. Get tickets to Methtacular at aboutfacetheater.org, playing now through September 28th at Theater Wit.
Many consider Terrence McNally the greatest gay playwright of his generation. In Some Men, McNally presents snapshots and characters from the 1920s through today that are hilarious and heartbreaking. For tickets to Some Men, visit brownpapertickets.com, or for information, visit pridefilmsandplays.com. Some Men, presented by Pride Films and Plays, runs through September 13th.
And for more Culture Club, visit windycitytimes.com.
Anyone out there? Bueller? Bueller? Post a comment at windycityqueercast.com.
Yeah, it's pretty clear. I ain't no size 2, but I can shake it like I'm supposed to do. 'Cause I got that boom boom that all the boys chase, and all the right junk in all the right places. I see the magazines working out Photoshop. We know that shit ain't real. Come on now, make it stop. If you got beauty, beauty, just raise them up. 'Cause every inch of you is perfect from the bottom to the top. Yeah, my mama, she told me, don't worry about your size. She says boys like a little more booty to hold at night. And no, I won't be no stick figure silicone Barbie doll. So if that's what you're into,
Miss Coco Peru may be best known for her role in the 1999 gay film Trick, for which she shared the Best Actress Award with the two co-stars of the film at the HBO Comedy Art Festival and the Best Actor Award at the LA's Outfest Film Festival. And now Miss Coco Peru is coming to Chicago with the Cabaret Project this September. Perhaps over the past 20 years, you've caught one of her award-winning one-woman shows in a city near you. Fiercely funny, unapologetic, with a keen eye for observation, Coco combines the best of what a monologist can do, makes us laugh, connects with us, and helps us see humanity on display, even if she's zhuzhed up in sequins, heels, and that perfect red banged flip. And I am so excited because usually she is the hostess with the mostest, but I am thrilled to turn the tables and host Miss Coco Peru on the Queercast today. Hello, Coco. How are you?
I'm wonderful. What a beautiful introduction. May I make one correction?
Yes.
I did not win any awards for Trick, although people say I should have. The awards I shared were with my co-stars of the film Girls Will Be Girls.
Oh, Girls Will Be Girls, of course.
Yes,
the other film we all know you for.
Exactly. So I just wanted to give my co-stars the proper credit.
I always appreciate being corrected, especially with someone with such tidy hair. It makes me really happy. You know, I have a thing for redheads. My first was a redhead. So.
Oh, really? Well, yes. I appreciate that you some people don't like to be corrected, so I appreciate that.
I am a work in progress, Coco, let me tell you. And my best friend growing up from summer camp, her name was Coco. So I have a very close place in my heart for her. Name was Caroline, and everyone called her Coco. So, you know, I have an affinity with your name even to this day.
That's wonderful.
Tell me, where were you born and what was your given name?
Well, I was born in the Bronx on a little island. Well, I was born in the Bronx, but I grew up on an island in the Bronx as well. It was called City Island, and it was a tiny little island in the North Bronx, about a mile long and about a half mile at its widest. And most people, when they go up there, feel like they're leaving the Bronx. It doesn't feel anything like the Bronx. It's all nautical and fish houses and very sailboats and little boat club, so it's a completely different world stuck in the middle of New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And my given name is Clinton.
Mm-hmm. Now, for Clinton, growing up in that little fishing village, it sounds like little sail cottagey village of the Bronx, which many of us, I mean, that's interesting. I would never think that if you're born in the Bronx, that that's, you know, what you were surrounded by. What were those early influences for you around comedy or performance or singing that, you know, as a kid, you know, lit up your eyes and got you excited?
I do believe there is just something you're born with. And I grew up, you know, neither of my parents were musical. I mean, they had an appreciation for music. Music mm-hmm. was often played in our home. It was the music of my parents' generation, and I was born late in their lives. So I grew up listening to, you know, Nat King Cole.
Yep.
And that kind of music. Big band, too, was played in my house.
Yep.
So, and my parents were very social. They had a big group of friends, and they were all survivors. You know, they had survived World War II.
Yep.
And so they had a real zest for life and laughing mm-hmm. and were very, very, and I think out of that pain comes comedy, you know.
Yes.
They had, a lot of them had hard lives, my father, so they were very funny. There were also a lot of alcoholics,
yep.
but, and that often, you know, I always associated booze with, you know, laughter and having a great time.
Right.
But
it's funny till it's not, you know, it is
exactly.
funny till it's not.
Exactly. They used to have parties, and I was actually the one. I'd walk around with a pad and pencil taking drink orders.
Yes.
And I loved it. And I grew up around a lot of funny people. So I mm-hmm. think those were my first influences, was sitting with my parents and their friends mm-hmm. at these huge house parties with, mm-hmm. you know, ashtrays piled a mile high of, mm-hmm. you know, cigarette butts. The booze is flowing. Mm-hmm. And they're telling hilarious stories. And I soaked it up. I wanted to be around those people more than I wanted to be around people my own age.
It's really interesting because as you're saying that, you know, it's evoking for me style, and it's evoking for me an atmosphere, all of which I feel like you then embodied in Coco Peru. So how did Coco come about for you? Because she definitely, if I said, where's her, what era is her foot in?
I don't
you've
know.
Just described it, but you've kind of described it for me, at least in some ways, you know,
it's, yeah, you know, it's
bridge
I, when I did
by
my
day,
show in San...
bridge parties by day, and those
exactly.
continued cocktail parties by night, right?
Exactly. When I did my show in San Francisco, someone gave me a great compliment. They said, you know, I felt like I was in your living room and we were, even though you were the only one talking, I felt like we were all in it together. And we were at this great little like cocktail party,
yep.
and I thought that's exactly like kind of the way I grew up, and mm-hmm. It was just a wonderful compliment. I loved it.
Yeah, I kind of can see. I grew up in Tennessee, so it's a very different community, but I can kind of see in my variety of that, you know, the cardboard tables coming out and the congealed salads and the bowl of punch, you know, and smoking, you know. And, yeah, I kind of get the whole, I get the flavor. So tell me, when did you start manifesting Coco and start doing the very scary thing, which I've talked to a lot of solo or stand-up performers about, which is like going on stage and doing it by yourself for, you know, a set. I mean, when did that start for you, or how did it start for you?
When I was in, college, I went to Adelphi on Long Island, and I was in the theater program, and it was very liberating for me on many levels to just be out of the Bronx mm-hmm. and to be surrounded by other people who were interested in the same things as me. But I was very closeted still, mm-hmm. and I was also being told by my teachers, you know, to butch up, and that I wasn't mm-hmm. going to make it if I didn't butch up. So no one ever called me gay or called me out on it, but, you know, it was implied.
Yes.
And also there were gay students in the school, in that program specifically, that were out. So I was both scared by the whole gay thing, and yet I was beginning to realize that you could be gay and happy.
Yes.
Because I was seeing it with certain teachers and other students. Well, after I graduated college, I trained to be an actor, and I didn't really know what to do because I hadn't butched up as my teachers had suggested, and I realized I wasn't going to get anywhere. But at the same time, because of the AIDS crisis in New York City, the activism was really going strong, and mm-hmm. I wanted to be an activist, but I didn't know how to do that. So I read this book about the Native Americans and how they had this two-spirit, and I mm-hmm. kind of really connected with that and thought, oh my God, I finally have something that's telling me what I am, that I'm not male or female, that I'm kind of both, and that it was just so such a wonderful feeling to feel like I had finally a history.
Mm-hmm.
And I just one day decided I'm going to be a drag queen, and literally in that moment, I just felt like everything started falling into place.
Yeah.
From that moment, like internally, I just felt it was right, and then everything just fell into place. And as terrified as I was about doing a solo show, the passion and drive that I had was so much stronger than my fears, and those fears continue to this day. I literally have such anxiety about performing, but
it's a free fall. What you do, I mean, it's a free fall without a net. Kind of, I'm always so impressed with people who do one person shows or do stand up because you know it's really you. Unless you then remember and connect with the fact that you also have people in front of you. And then it can be, I think, in a weird way, it's the paradox, right? That it can be less scary because you have people in front of you that as soon as you just really try to connect with them, you are in conversation, right? I mean, you're a
exactly.
host. You're a host, so you get that as I am. It's
yeah, you just, it's, but like until that moment happens and until you feel that connection,
yeah.
you're just praying, you're just, yeah. you know, terrified that it's not going to be there.
You're like, tonight's the night the other shoe drops, the other shoe drops.
Exactly.
Where did the
You know, and that goes right back to my childhood and the alcoholism
uh-huh.
of you're just always waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Yeah.
That you never can be 100% secure because when is it going to be the night when, you know, the shit hits the fan again?
Yeah.
When the drinking's out of control. My dad was the alcoholic in my family, and he was a great father. He did quit drinking, and I loved him dearly. But there were a few years during my childhood where, because my sister had died, and you know, his own stuff, and they didn't believe in going to therapists back then,
mm-hmm.
where he just basically self-medicated for mm-hmm. a number of years. But it just happened to be in my formative years. And that affects your brain on some level.
Yeah, of course.
And so I had this desire to, you know, get up in front of people and be entertaining and connect with them. But at the same time, it is waiting for that other shoe to drop.
How do you write? I mean, I said in my intro and now, you know, just even getting to talk to you, the more and more I know of your story, how do you write? Because obviously, as you said, the comedy is the antidote for darkness or something that's not funny. But there is, you know, there is something that's grounded in something very real in your comedy. And I think that's, you know, this is my diagnosis, but it gives you longevity, right? I mean, it's not like, oh, you just had a funny night. Like, you actually have something to say, and therefore people want to hear you say it because people connect with it. So how do you write a show? Like, right now you're performing Have You Heard? That's the show you're going to be bringing here in September. How do you start writing your material, and do you derive a lot of it from your life still today, or?
Yes, everything I write is autobiographical.
Mm-hmm.
And I basically sit down in front of that blank screen, you know, and just think, there's no way I'm going to ever think of anything to write about.
Mm-hmm.
Then I just start writing. But also, you know, I now have dinner parties and have friends over. And at those parties, I tell just stories of things that have happened to me or memories that I have from my childhood. And often my friends will go, oh, my God, you should talk about that in a show. And I'll sort of remember that, and it kind of goes in this file in my brain somewhere. And then as I'm writing, I think, oh, well, maybe I could weave that into the story. And then before I know it, there's this sort of through line that is happening. And Have You Heard is actually because I'm going to be celebrating 25 years of doing drag,
wow,
of doing Coco, I did a it's a best of show, really. It has some new stuff in it as well. But I decided to go back, and there's even one monologue from my first show that I haven't done in so long. And it really is the monologue that put me on the map in New York City.
Hmm.
And as far as the, it's interesting, I think people come to see a drag show and they feel surprised that, oh, I actually kind of was moved, or I connected with what
right.
you said, or I remembered my own thing. And that's a blessing, and it's, sometimes it's a curse depending where I am, because where I met Amy in Puerto Vallarta, there's a lot of people there that are just there for vacation, and they're straight families, and they want to see, you know, someone doing Barbara Streisand, and they come to see my show, and they're like, what the hell is she talking about?
Right, right.
And unless they have gay friends or sort of, you know, somewhat cultural in the world is bigger than just,
yeah,
you know what I'm trying to say.
I do.
They can't relate to me, but for the most part, I've been very lucky over this. And I actually, in Puerto Vallarta, I had a great time, but I did have to tell the young people working at the front door that, you know, are barking the shows, please don't bark my show to the cruise ship people. They're not enjoying the experience, and I'm not enjoying it.
Yeah.
So once I found my audience in Puerto Vallarta, it was great. But
yeah,
that was an interesting kind of twist for me, because I'm used to fans coming that know what they're getting.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and I guess that's the difference, too. And your reference to Amy is not me for our listeners, but Amy Armstrong, who is...
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
No,
of course. Hey, she is pretty much the Amy in town, but I'm the other Amy. But just to give people reference, because people, you know, not even in Chicago know Amy Armstrong and Freddie. I was just going to say, it's really interesting because, right, you've been doing this 25 years. You've definitely seen the shift from LGBT characters and people and conversations and stories now really penetrating the mainstream. I mean, primarily through television, and I'm sure that with the advent of Logo and having two of your comedy specials on that show, Dragtastic and... Wisecrack, you do start finding a broader audience, but still really interesting that even, you know, that the truly mainstream, and you don't know this, but one of my co-hosts on the show, Mitchell, you know, he goes every year on a cruise with Second City. And so we talk about his travels a lot on the show, and you know, really the middle of the middle of the middle class, middle America, middle whatever, is primarily on a lot of the ships and things like that. And so that's what I hear that you're talking about, you know, and you and Mitchell and other queer artists on these ships, you know, I think continue to push, you know, who we are, how, you know, what our identities are and what our stories are. And, but I would imagine you've seen that real transition from really fringe to mainstream with your audience base and everything over a decade, two decades and a half.
I started doing these silly YouTube videos, and I wish I had more time to do them more often, because that completely changed my audience this past year.
Yeah.
And I did my show, Have You Heard, in New York. I did one night only, and I had 14-year-old girls at my show.
Yeah. The power of the interwebs, right?
Yes. I have mothers writing me who say, my daughter introduced me to you, and I'm in love with Coco. I want to be like Coco. I mean, it's fascinating. I have like a 6-year-old girl that loves my videos and named her chicken after me.
Everybody can't say that, Coco. You have arrived. That is your silver anniversary gift. That there is a chicken named.
To me, it's the miracle of YouTube now. I'm living through. I even talk about in my show how, you know, when I started, there were no computers.
Right.
I mean, no personal computers.
Right.
There was no internet.
Exactly.
Yeah. So the world, just in my 25 years of doing Coco, has completely changed.
Yeah.
And it's very, it's scary and exciting, And I feel lucky that I've been able to be Coco for all these years.
Do you
and I sort of celebrate that in this Have You Heard show.
I think that's fantastic. I mean, I mean, and it's amazing that you've gotten to do it in so many nooks and crannies this summer and that you're coming to us this fall. It's very exciting. Do you change your show as you go from town to town or city to city, or do you?
It depends on the venue of where I am. Mm-hmm. And I actually have, you know, full shows.
Yes.
Like the last one was She's Got Balls, and that's its own show. And then depending on the city, I can either do a whole show if they have video and whatnot, or I can do something like Have You Heard, which is a best of show.
Right.
But Have You Heard is my new best of show, and I actually thought it was going to be really easy to put it together because I was like, oh, I'm just pulling stuff from different shows. And it was so difficult, and I still wanted to have that through line that my shows have. And I managed to do it, it's been a really warm, wonderful experience getting to perform it, and also to really look back at, you know, some of my earlier writings and just to see how it everything has changed. It's been great.
Who's exciting you right now, younger performers or you know, or where is the future of this form of, you know, one-person shows or monologuing or even the world of drag right now and personas?
Yeah, I think the world of drag is just a very much more mainstream than when I started and much more accessible to these young kids. So I rode that wave of drag during Tu Wong Fu and when RuPaul was first getting her start. Well, she had been around for a while, but I'm talking about when she hit the mainstream.
Exactly.
There was this whole explosion of drag in the early 90s, and that's just when I happened to start doing drag, and it also was because I was doing something completely different than what was expected of drag.
Exactly.
And people were really starting to take notice of New York drag queens and what they were doing. Mm-hmm. And for that reason, I think, you know, back then you didn't have the internet, and you didn't have it was much harder to get noticed. So in a way, you really had to work really hard to get a newspaper in to review your show or to get people interested, so that there was talk around town that this was a show you needed to see. Mm-hmm. And I was out, you know, all the time passing out flyers.
Mm-hmm.
And I would spray paint on sidewalk, Miss Coco Peru, she knows. and people go, what does that mean, she knows? You know, and it intrigued them to want to come see my show.
Guerrilla publicity. Guerrilla
exactly.
Marketing,
it was
right?
Guerrilla marketing. And I used to write phony letters pretending to be a producer that was producing this show, and I had a whole logo and all this stuff, and I would send that out to people.
Yeah. How far she's come.
Yes, but that's the difference now. And in many ways, it's wonderful that it's so much easier for these young people to be able to find me or to find each other in the internet. But at the same time, I feel like because it's easier, sometimes people don't feel like they need to work as hard to get the fame.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fame is very, with reality shows and whatnot, you can be famous for basically not for nothing.
Yes.
For just being on television.
That's right.
And having a big mouth.
That's right.
And
personalities nowadays happens from
exactly.
Thin air. You know, there's
and
no thought behind it or creation behind it or anything.
Exactly. And I can find that thoroughly entertaining, but I think I can also put it in its place and know why it's entertaining and why and what it is. But would I pay $40 to go see that person?
Right.
And get a photo with them and that's it? No.
Yeah.
And that's so there's sometimes where my concern lies for the younger generation of, it seems that just being famous for being on television is enough for them.
Right.
They don't expect anything more and they're happy with that.
You have an ongoing live series of shows in LA, Conversations with Coco, where you talk with fantastic guests, and you've had a number of very famous people, sit across from you. Do you have a dream guest to appear, living or dead, if you could sit across from somebody?
I have two that I would really be excited about. One is Shirley MacLaine.
Mm. I would go to Santa Fe with you, and I would love to sit by a cactus while you talk to her. I love Santa Fe, and I go once a year, and I keep going, I'm going to find Ally McGraw and Shirley MacLaine, and we're going to have, like, you know, some mole somewhere. It's going to be
That's
great.
At the Pink Adobe.
Yes.
Yes. I love Santa Fe.
I love
it,
too.
And I have a dear friend that lives there. And my other guest would be Dolly Parton.
Mm. Are we separated? Do we have, like, the same parents? Well, my father's not an alcoholic, but I'm serious. Like, those are great guesses. I mean, Dolly Parton is one of mine, and I've interviewed people since 1998, and I have never interviewed her. And
I would love to interview, because I did have a conversation with Lily Tomlin,
mm-hmm.
and I had another one with Jane Fonda. So I feel like I need to do Dolly Parton complete that triangle. You know, I feel like my life won't be complete until that happens.
Ugh. Coco. If I do or you do, we should just find a way for, you know, the other one to be there and ask at least one question.
Just piggyback.
That's right. Well, it is exciting that you are coming to Chicago. Many people have seen you perform, but it's rare when you get to be in our own backyard. And so Miss Coco Peru will perform for the Cabaret Project Divine Decadence series. And it is divinely decadent because Miss Coco Peru will be here on Friday, September 26th at Circuit Nightclub, where the whole Cabaret Project series is. Circuit Nightclub is 3641 North Halsted, right there in the heart of Boys Town. Tickets are on sale now. I believe VIPs may even be sold out. So, I don't know. Send them emails and send up a flare and tell them you want a VIP ticket. But tickets are on sale now at buytix.com. We have that linked in our show notes. And then she's heading, in case you don't live in the Chicago area, she's heading to California and then New York City with Have You Heard, and other dates always getting added. So, go to the MissCoco.com website, which we also have linked, MissCoco.com. Click on her calendar page for hopefully an opportunity for Miss Coco to be coming to a town near you. Coco, thank you so much. And I know Chicago is going to turn out.
I hope they do. It's one of my favorite cities. I love it there. And I've been there a few times, and I always have a great time. And I adore Amy Armstrong. We were roommates in Puerto Vallarta, and I could not have asked for a better roommate. And we've become, you know, friends for life. And I'm thrilled that she's the one that's bringing me there.
Well, she's an amazing.
So support Amy as well.
Absolutely, we always support Amy Armstrong. She is such a wonderful ambassador to the LGBT community here, and to our city, and to cabaret and performance in general. In this town, and we owe a lot to her, to Amy and Freddie. Miss Coco Peru, don't miss her. Coming to Chicago Friday, September 26th, Circuit Nightclub. Tickets are on sale now, so be there or be square. It's my birthday week. I'll be there. Be there.
Oh, wonderful.
You want to be there, for sure, for sure. Thank you so much, Miss Coco. We appreciate
it. Thank you, Amy.
Got something to say? Call us today, 312-21-BE-GAY. Well, everybody, next week, Mitchell Fain and I will be sitting on the couch. We'll be talking about his home state of Rhode Island, because I have finally been there now. And it is fabulous, and you're all going to want to go. We're going to be talking about my travels to Provincetown, the best of what I saw, who I met, and also Newport, Rhode Island, and what I thought of the tiniest little city with the biggest heart that I've ever experienced. So amazing. And Mitchell Fain will be with me through it all, probably using a Rhode Island accent. I hope so. Happy Labor Day, everyone. Don't work too hard. I know I'm not going to. Don't tell my boss. Is she listening? Bye, everyone. Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast. Queer and now.